Well, this was a big week on Wall Street. Did you catch it? Big IPO. Facebook started out at $38 a share. And then it immediately, even before the market opened, it was at $42 a share. Then it rose to $45 a share. 573 million shares traded. But then by the end of the day, it closed back at $38 a share. It was just a big hyped up IPO. I'm sure all of you bought tons and tons of shares of Facebook. I don't understand the company. It's worth $104 billion, supposedly. And this is for company. Now think about this. This is a company that sells nothing. They produce nothing except information. We put our information on Facebook, for those of you who have Facebook, and then other people see that information, and all that process generates $104 billion. That is a lot of money for just information. But we live in the information age. And I don't understand it, but apparently people a lot smarter than I do understand it. And so Facebook went public. Now, the day before it went public, the owner of Facebook, or the inventor of Facebook, you know, there's a movie out about him. I've not seen this movie yet. So I don't really know much about him except for what I read from the letter that he sent to his potential investors, which maybe went to you. I don't know. But it said, "Dear potential investor." See, I don't understand. It's information. We put our stuff on the internet, and then other people read ours. It's our stuff. And he gets $104 billion out of this. I don't know. He should be thanking us. I did call to see if he'd come and speak this morning and to thank us, but he didn't return my phone. Anyway, so dear potential investor, this tells you a lot about him. Dear potential investor, for years you've wasted your time on Facebook. Now here's a chance to waste your money on it too. This is what he wrote. Tomorrow is Facebook's IPO, and I know what some of you are thinking. How will this Facebook be any different from the dot-com bubble of the early 2000s? That's exactly what I was thinking, actually. Well, for one thing, those bad dot-com stocks were all speculation and hype and weren't based on real business. Facebook, on the other hand, is based on a solid foundation of angry birds and imaginary sheep. Second, Facebook is the most successful social network in the world, enabling millions to share information of no interest with people they barely know. Third, every time someone clicks on a Facebook ad, Facebook makes money. Now that I believe. And while no one has ever done this on purpose, millions have done it by mistake while drunk. We totally stole this idea from iTunes. Finally, if you invest in Facebook, you'll be far from alone. As a result of using Facebook over the past few years, over 900 million people in the world have suffered mild to moderate brain damage, impairing their ability to make reasoned judgments. These will be your fellow Facebook investors. With your help, if it all goes as planned tomorrow, Facebook will net $100 billion. To put that number in context, it will take J.P. Morgan 4 or 5 trades to lose that much money. One last thing. What will I, Mark Zuckerberg, do with $18 billion I'm expected to earn from the IPO? Well, I'm considering buying Greece. But that would still leave me with about $18 billion. LOL, your friend. Please friend me, Mark. So that's Mark Zuckerberg. And I was saying, I don't know much about him. But as I was reading through his letter, it told me a lot about him. He's a fun guy. He's young. He certainly understands people. He likes to laugh it up, live it up a little bit. But as I was reading this, I was wondering, is he really qualified? And he maybe is. I'm not saying he's not. But is he really qualified to be running a company of 100 billion strong? Has he gone and found the right upper-level management team to make sure that the Facebook corporation is still going to continue? Because if I'm going to put my money in there, I'm going to want to make sure that he's got the right people in the right locations, and he didn't just get like his friends to kind of take over different business things, but he got the right people at the right time. Because if I'm investing money, I want to make sure that that money earns interest or earns profit, right? Is he that type of guy? And I really don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. But I do know that the success of the business completely hinges upon that question. How does the next level of management stand up? And are they going to be able to face the task ahead of them? Now, the reason why I'm talking about Facebook is because Jesus is in the same point. No, he's not doing an IPO. I understand that. But he is now preaching on, he is now, the night before he's dying, and he is saying this sermon, he's praying this sermon, and this particular section of the sermon, last week he prayed for himself, this week he's praying for his disciples, who are his next level of management, who's going to take this movement from when he leaves to after he's gone, and they're going to make sure that they're all on the same page and all going the same direction, and they're going to lead this movement. And so now he's praying for them because he's not going to be around much longer. And they're going to be the ones tasked with taking this task forward, this IPO forward. And so as he prays for this morning, we're going to look at this section from John, beginning at verse 6, but if you were going to pray for your next leaders, if you were going to pray for the people that are going to take over your company, what would you pray for? You might pray for good health. You might pray for good market conditions. You might pray that that people still would continue to want your product. And if your retirement was based upon the profitability of the company because it's some sort of buyout, you would pray that the company would make enough money so that it would continue to buy you out in the company, right? Those are the things that you would pray for. But that's not what Jesus prays for. As a matter of fact, what Jesus prays for is probably going to completely surprise you because it's actually at the very end where Jesus says, Lord, sanctify them in the truth. Lord, sanctify them in the truth. That's his prayer. When you look through this whole entire prayer, what it all comes down to in that last verse is, Lord, sanctify them. Now, that word sanctify is a big, high, holy church word, and you may have heard it before, but you may not understand what it is. The root word in Greek is hagia, basically. Hagiadzo. Basically, that it's the same word as holiness. Hagia. God, Jesus Christ, is praying that his people, that his disciples, not that they be successful, not that they have money, not that the market treats them well and all that, he's praying that they be holy. Now you say, why in the world would he pray for that? But see, Jesus was all about holiness. If you look at Jesus' life and you look at what attracted people to Jesus, he didn't have money, he didn't have fame, he didn't have fortune, he didn't have a Corvette. He didn't have a Lear jet that took him from place to place. It was just himself, and it was himself. It was his holiness that drew people to him. And it was a holiness that people just globbed onto. They saw Jesus, and they wanted to be with him. It was his patience. It was his love. It was his peace. It was his humility. Everything about him, they loved. It was very attractive to them, and it brought people all the time. I remember when I was a kid, I used to have this magnet, and it was a U-shaped magnet, and we used to draw it through the ground like this, and all of a sudden you'd pull it out, and there'd be these fragments of metal that would stick to the magnet. And that would be like Jesus kind of walking through the crowds, and people would take notice at this man. And they would start to follow him, and they wanted to listen to him because he was a holy man. He was a completely perfect holy man, and it drew people to him. And so when Jesus prays to his disciple or prays to God about his disciples, what he is praying is, Lord, keep them holy. May it be attractive. May the love that they show be so attractive that people just want to be a part of this. And if you look at the early church and if you look at what the disciples did, especially in the book of Acts, they were a very attractive group of people. They came together. They pooled their resources. They helped those in need. They prayed. They were an attractive group, and people flocked to them. And Jesus had prayed, Lord, keep them holy. My question for us this morning is, are we holy? Are you holy? If people were to look at your Facebook this morning, if you have Facebook, would they be attracted by what they see? Would they see a person of calm demeanor, of love for God, of love for Jesus, of love for other people, that has patience and character an enduring hope? Is that what they would see? Would they see somebody that is so in love and on fire of Jesus that they would see something in you that they would want? Remember 1 Peter 3:16, always be prepared for the hope that is within you so that when people ask you, what's going on in your life? Why are you such an attractive person that you can tell them, I follow Jesus Christ? That's what Jesus calls us to be, is holy people. And the only weapons that we have in this world to fight this world, and the only weapon that Jesus Christ wants us to have is that, to be holy, to stand up for Him and be people that are so attractive that people would want to follow Him. Are you a holy person? But it's not just that, because when you look at what Jesus is saying here, He's not just saying that we individually are holy, but He's saying that the church may be united as one, as a holy people. Think about what it says in 1 Peter 2, verses 9 and following, where Peter says, but you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of Him who called you out of darkness into His wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. And once you had not received mercy, but now you received mercy. Are we a people united together in holiness to serve God? Are we a church where people walk in these doors and they say, man, I want to be a part of that. There's something about them that is just so attractive to me that I can't help but just being curious about it, and I want to find out more about it, and I want to be like them. Are we a church like that? Because Jesus Christ has called us. His number one prayer at the end of His life was not for fame or for fortune or for good health or for good weather. May my church, may those who follow me be holy, so holy that it will bring this movement forward. Are we like that? Are we a holy people? Are we united in our holiness? You know, if you take systems theory, one of the exercises that you'll do is you'll have people stand in a circle, and it's like we're standing here with hands, and then they'll put a stress in the system. They might take a person and start to pull on them so that they fall backwards. But because they're connected to the circle, those people around it absorb that force until everybody in the circle begins to absorb that force. And because that person is connected in that circle, they will not fall. Are we a church where people are connected in such a way that if a force external to them starts to pull on them, if a disease or a sickness or a hurt or a loss of job or a loss of a family member or something starts to pull on them, are we going to grab a hold of them and make sure that they stay in the circle and stay whole? Are we a holy people? Because that is the number one prayer that Jesus calls for us, is to be a holy people, holy, attractive to the world. And now the answer to this question is, well, of course. Because if you look at this prayer, who's praying it? Jesus. Now, do you think Jesus' prayer is going to go unanswered? Do you think God's going to say, no, I'm not going to do that? When Jesus prays, you know, it gets answered, I'm imagining. So when Jesus is praying for holiness, the holiness gets answered. But it may get answered in a way that you don't understand or may not fully realize, because this is the night before He goes to His death, and He is praying for holiness. But the way that He can ensure that His church remains holy is for Him to buy and purchase your holiness, which He does on the cross. And when He lies there in agony and pain, all the sins that we do, all the times that we have not acted like a church, rest on Him. And when the blood falls, He buys with His own precious blood our holiness, so that in the end we can stand before God a holy people set apart for His work. He loved us so much that in His dying breath, He bought it, our holiness, so that we could be with Him forever. And if you look at the church and look at what they've done since His death, there have been a lot of things that have not been great, but by and large, He has continued on working in His church. It's an amazing thing. If you look at Facebook investors, I don't know if you can say the same thing. One of the Facebook investors is Eduardo Saverin, who's a big, he's a big uppity-up in the Facebook, and I guess he's decided to renounce his U.S. citizenship, so he's going somewhere else. Bono, did you know that Bono is an investor of Facebook? I guess about 2-3 years ago, he invested $90 million in Facebook. It's now worth $1.5 billion. He's now the richest musician on the face of the earth, surpassing Paul McCartney. I did not know this. But he owns 2.3% of Facebook. There is an eclectic set of people that are involved in Facebook. But you know, there's an eclectic set of people involved in Christianity too. But the fact is that billions upon billions of people over time have called Jesus Christ their Lord and their Savior, and they have followed him with that attractive holiness that he bought for them. And that is Jesus' prayer in his name.
Before you, I was a flame burning down. I was burning.